Okay. So you're gonna vote for him?
Apparently.
Oh.
Things are going to be right away here.
All right. Welcome everybody out. Utah Prosecution Council meeting. Let's just go around the table and identify everybody who's here. We'll start right here.
Gary Eddington, Garfield County Attorney.
Spence Austin, Chief Deputy.
Steve Garcia, Layton City.
Marilyn Jasperson, Utah Prosecution Council.
Tyson Skeen, West Jordan City.
Wait, Utah Prosecution Council.
Paul Boyden, DA's office, SWAT.
Bob Church, Prosecution Council.
Jeff Buman, Utah County Attorney.
Scott Swett, Wasatch County Attorney's Office.
Jan Ferris, Morgan County Attorney.
And Stephen Flett, Duchesne County Attorney. All right, start number one, minutes from January 9th. Has anybody reviewed those?
I did, and I'd move that we approve them.
Second.
Move second, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, next up, the UPC update, current issues. Bob?
Okay, just to let you know, for fall, I will most likely be gone for fall conference and fall UPC meeting. I've got military, supposed to be on military orders for a worldwide JAG conference. So Marilyn is going to cover for me for that meeting. I just want to let you all know now, because then in June, I'm going to allow her to kind of do a lot of this just so she gets a feel for it while I'm here. So I just want to let everybody know so that when we get to June, it won't be a surprise. Okay.
Just don't do that too often. They'll find out they don't need you.
Exactly. All right. We completed the new county attorney conference, as you can see in the summary. We had everybody there except for Scott Burns from Paiute. It was a great conference. We got really good comments. Governor Herbert, General Reyes, and his exec staff, the acting U.S. Attorney Christensen, and John Huber, who was the U.S. Attorney designee, were all able to come and share some remarks. So I think it went really well. I know some of you were there for that, so we appreciate your attendance. They really appreciated the civil portion of the conference. Marilyn, was there anything else that you want to report on that? Just other than the facilities, we had some challenges with the facility, and we probably won't be going back there. All right, then, as you may all recall, at the fall executive conference, Jared Eldridge made the request that we do a mental health conference. And so we scrambled and got that together. Appreciate Jeff and I'm totally missing my names.
Don.
Craig.
Don Rosenbaum.
Several people from the hospital all came together. We came up with a good agenda. We built it as a mental health 101. The mental health professionals were actually really excited to work with us. Afterwards, they just mentioned that they were grateful that they had the opportunity to present to prosecutors to get that information out. Apparently, there was a conference similar to this or some other interaction, but it's been many, many years. And so I think if we were to do it again, we would be well received with that. We held it at the state hospital. It was a good location. We got it for free, which was nice. If this conference, if we were to do it again and it got any bigger, it probably wouldn't hold more than 45 attendees, but if, you know, it remains small, the hospital is a good place. We had to bring in lunch, but that gave us an opportunity then to actually add an hour of ethics with it. Obviously, there's some issues that were not resolved. You know, what do you do with those that are mentally incompetent and will never be found to be competent, yet they can continue to commit crime? And so, you know, there was a discussion on that, and obviously, like I said, there's really no great answer, but I think that there's room for dialogue with providers and others, so it's just a good potential for future conference. Okay, so those are the conferences. Spring conference.
Just to add to the mental health, we did film the entire thing, and it will be posted on the web, so if any of you need CLE, that'll be available soon.
Right. Okay. Spring conference obviously starts tomorrow at the downtown Sheraton. The agenda is there at tab B. Let's see. Everything is ready. All of the materials are now up online so they can be downloaded. When we were making assignments and actually previous to that, we all warned Boyden that he needed to wear his bulletproof vest when he talks about 8338, 348. So we think he's ready for that. While Mark's not here...
Just the messenger.
Just the messenger. So while Mark is not here, obviously he will be at the conference. Just, if you wouldn't mind, just thanking him because he took on the formidable task of formatting, compiling, editing, indexing, really doing everything on the legislative summary, which was I really appreciated because I just didn't have, well, I would have made time, obviously, but it was nice of him to do that. For the remainder of the year, in terms of training, that's on tab C in your packet. You'll see, let's see, it's pretty much business as usual. We've got the CJC, oh, excuse me, let me back up. We will be doing the regional legislative updates. Hopefully you have seen the emails that have come out. We'll be at 23 locations around the state. Ed and Donna and I, oh, which reminds me, we need to excuse Donna, just so you're all aware, her husband has open heart surgery tomorrow. Is in really dire predicament. A third of his heart muscle was damaged in a previous heart attack, but he's got other problems as well as deteriorating arteries. So she's excused for today, and our thoughts are with her. But between Ed, Dawn, and I, as I said, we'll be traveling around the state. We've got all the locations ready, materials, so we're good with that. The CJC DV conference will be up at Snowbird, anticipate a good conference. UPAA, we'll hear more about that in a couple of minutes. The OOMPA conference, that is set and ready to go. BASIC, we will be meeting in a couple weeks to plan out BASIC, but again, it's just the established formula. Fall, it will be in Park City, so we anticipate that we'll have better attendance just because it's closer. And so we hope that our numbers will be up. That, I'm looking forward, well, I wish I could be here because we have a presenter from Cook County who teaches for NDAA on using electronics in the courtroom. And for people that have seen his presentation, says it's really outstanding. So he will be flying out. He speaks to prosecutors for free. So the only costs that we are incurring is bringing him out. So that will be great. He'll do a plenary session for everybody, but then he will also be doing breakout, a specific breakout. So we're looking forward to that. Civil practice, there's the dates there. Again, the training, the committee for that will be meeting shortly. November, I don't have a date because we're trying to verify which date we can get into the Viridian Center, but there was a request that we put together a white collar crime conference. When I agreed to do that, I didn't realize that the AG's office, their CLE had committee had taken over that a couple years ago. I mean, and that's fine because, you know, we're happy to help out with that. But we had a committee that we got together. We've come up with a good agenda. Again, there was an out-of-state speaker that was recommended on e-discovery and things related to
e-documents.
I called him. And I expected to get a secretary, but he picked up his phone and I talked with him, and he's actually moving to Utah. In fact, he might be here already. He's opening up an office for his firm there. I mean, they're a worldwide firm. They've got offices all over the country in London. But he also speaks for free to prosecutors. So since he'll be living here, we won't be incurring any kind of a cost with that. So we've got, you know, a nationally world-recognized keynote speaker for that. So that'll be a great conference. And then, of course, in November, the County and District Attorney's Executive Seminar. Okay, oh, regional updates. I guess I got ahead of myself. You can, on tab D, you can see where we'll be at. So if any of your officers or the prosecutors in your on your staff can't make it, you know, or not able to come, we're at least going to be going over the legislation, so, you know, get the word out that they will be able to attend. Let's see, we're doing two in Vernal and two in Washington County. Other than that, it will just be the one presentation in each of those areas. I guess, Leighton, you guys have already done yours.
There's one for Davis County.
Yeah.
We do one within our own department and invite some of the surrounding departments.
Okay.
But still those.
Oh, that's right.
Davis.
So we may not see as many from Leighton or Davis
County
itself. Okay. Okay. So any questions so far on what we've done, upcoming conferences or anything?
One note on spring conference, our registration as of this morning was 345. Last year we had 360.
So I'm ahead of that.
Yeah, we're okay. All right, we're moving rapidly. Okay, so at the last council meeting, we were authorized to spend $500 to search and look for a new logo. So you can see what I did, the efforts that we took. I'm going to go to that, just kind of give you a brief overview. At Tabby, you'll see what the actual logo is. If you've been receiving emails from us, you'll see on your handouts that we've already started incorporating this. But after the last meeting, I went to the AG's finance department, talked to the people just down the hall, and they gave me a list of pre-approved designers. The lowest bidder on that list was at $47 an hour, so I know it was going to be, you know, kind of close. So I looked at the statute, called another department, and because UPC didn't actually fit into the anyway, long story short is I was able to look elsewhere or open up the bidding to
the bid process.
The suggestion was contacting one of the either the U or BYU's graphic design department, maybe sponsoring a contest with the, you know, the approved $500 as a cash prize. I was sent back some emails that with some professional articles saying that that's not appropriate to ask students, professionals to do that because that's getting work for free without, you know, any guarantee of compensation. So they suggested that I create an account on their job board, which I did, and got a few more prospective applicants through that. Then our law clerk mentioned that one of his law school for buddies that he goes to school with does graphics design, and so he submitted, and we actually liked his designs, his the best, and he was the cheapest. He only charged $30 an hour, so we went ahead and had him design. You can see what he did, and he spent 13 hours on it, only charges $390. Mm-hmm. So, and then he did a little bit of consulting work with us, helping us with our web page, which we'll get to in just a couple of minutes. So not only, I was just thinking we were going to get a web page, but we've got a couple of versions of the logo for our web page. He created headers and footers for our letterhead, did our business cards, and then has came up or modified his logo for printing on swag. So I think we really got a bang for our buck. You know, for $390, we did really well. So, like I said, you can see there's the printout in your packet. For those of you that are black or white, I apologize. But the one thing is a UPC staff, as we were looking at, you know, logos, the comment was made is that's what people know us as, is UPC, not necessarily a logo. Trent had actually looked at our mission statement and had come up with like a little courthouse that had pillars representing each of our mission statements, and we thought, you know, it's nice, but nobody's going to know what those pillars mean. Whereas, you know, UPC, I mean, that's who we are. That's how people know us around the state. We thought that's really our brand. That's our logo. And so that's one of the reasons that we liked what he came up with. So hopefully the council approves what we did. And any questions on that? Okay. All right. Then moving into the financial report. On tab F, you'll see the surcharge. So let me just draw your attention to a couple of things. So you can see what the surcharge was for this month, which was $52,186.65. I just gave the totals. I didn't break it down in terms of surcharges. But as you can see, through March of last year, we were at $395,055, whereas this year we're at $406,700,000. So we're a little bit better off than we were last year. And you know, you can see, you can compare the numbers. Marilyn and I, as we were looking through the numbers, we think we're going to be okay. One of the comments that I'd made in my summary of this last year is, you know, there's some things that I learned about doing the budget that I will incorporate this next year. Just so that the numbers look better, but I mean, I think we're going to be fine. Anything else? Well, actually, let's go to the actual budget itself. Okay, so then the comparison report is at G, and so you can see where we're at. In your notes, I drew attention to anything that was above Well, above a certain percentage. You'll see that we're at 246% on PIMS, and that's because we have received $56,753 so far. I underestimated the income we were going to receive from PIMS this year, thinking that we would have fewer users, hoping that you know, there would be a third-party system in place. So that's, I suppose, good news in that, you know, we're getting more than expected. Unfortunately, you know, it means that we didn't get that system for the offices. Let's see. I need to, actually, let me just look at my notes. Okay, conference materials. We early this year, fiscal year, we made a purchase. They've been sitting at the warehouse. We were just waiting for the logo. I was hoping to have them ready for spring conference so we could pass them out, but they're not ready, so we will get you our news. It's a half-zip windbreaker running type thing. It's called Collegiate Purple. It's Maryland's favorite colors, purple and black for the
Colorado Rockies.
It's pretty slick. So we've got that. The training committee was a huge expense, and it was mostly mileage because, if you may recall, we do the training committee meets for the 2 days prior to civil conference. And so for everyone that's on the committee, we had to pay for mileage down to St. George. That's something, you know, maybe the council wants to look at that. Like I said, I think we're going to be okay in terms of the budget, but that is a rather large expense that we do incur whenever we are off the Wasatch Front for the training committee. So just be aware of why that is where it's at. The out-of-state travel is a little more, again, than was expected. You'll see that Ed has done quite a bit of traveling, which numerically looks bad, but it's covered. Looks bad is maybe the wrong word. He has just been doing a ton of traveling, which he'll talk about, and he's been doing, you know, just great things in his travels, and all of that is covered by grants. So it's a big number, but don't be overly concerned with that. For those of you that remember from year to year in the budget, we have, there's a new entry, this TOX E. Again, that is something that Ed will talk about. It's a mini grant that he received, pretty exciting. So that's just wait for Ed's report on that. Let's see. Then in terms of a detailed, is there any questions on the budget before I go to a detailed expense report? Okay. At tab H is the detailed expense report for the two conferences that we had. For the new county attorney, we budgeted $2,000. We don't charge any kind of a registration fee, so that's just pure expense. But we did come under budget by $231, provided that we can work out some latent billing issues with the conference location. For mental health, because it wasn't in our budget, I didn't have anything to start out with. However, we did collect $2,250 in registration fees and only expended a little over $1,000. Again, it was because the location was free and we liked that, so we were able to net $1,200 on that conference. So any questions then on that? Okay, moving on then. The reference in the statute there, 519406, is right before the session started. I was up at the CCJJ meeting with Ned Searle talking about Donna and how we're going to fund Donna's salary if, in fact, her grant goes away in the fall of 2016. So,
who made that decision?
Well,
I never heard that on an agenda, so. How did we decide we were going to fund her if her grant went away? I thought we spoke about exactly the opposite.
No. Their concern is how can we keep Donna? Mm-hmm. And so that's what they're asking me is what are we going to do? I said, well, I don't know. I don't know if we can afford to keep Donna.
Definitely one the board will want to talk about, just so you know.
No, I agree. Okay. I agree. It's just I was up there, and he said the grant, well, let me back up. We don't know that the grant will not be renewed. We just know that it expires in 2016. There has been some talk that CCJJ may not renew the grant, but I don't believe that they would really do that because Donna is just one of eight grantees under the grant. So I'm looking in a worst-case scenario, trying to think, are there ways, other ways to fund Donna if, in fact, the grant goes away? And of course, Jan, as you mentioned, if it goes away, then the committee has to, the council needs to make that decision. But as I was sitting in Ned's office, Dave Walsh came in, who's also another of the grant managers, and he said, well, aren't you aware that there's this percentage of the surcharge that is supposed to be for training of county and city attorneys on domestic violence issues? And I wasn't aware of that. So he brought to my attention this statute, the 519406. And there's this a 5% or 0.5% that goes to the AG's office. Or, well, you can see this, the language of the statute, and that it should be used for training municipal and county attorneys. And I said, okay, I wasn't aware of that. As you'll see on the surcharge report, to date, there's been $67,783 that has gone into the AG's office. And so I asked Donna if she was aware, and maybe Spence, you know, can help me fill in the blanks here. Donna's aware that there was some, I think it was Chris Knowlton did a stocking presentation for Ogden. Chris helped her edit the DV-101 manual, but I'm not aware that there's been any other training. And so what Dave was asking me is, well, why don't you go back to the AG and you know, ask them what the funds are used for? So Greg Fairbrush is who is right above me. He's the Justice Division Director. And so I talked to him about it, and ironically, he had mentioned about some funds that were coming into the AG's office. It was right after, I think, the last council meeting, but I wasn't aware that it was these funds. And so I think we finally figured out that we may be talking about the same source of funding. You know, his statement to me was if this money's coming in, and you know it's not being used for what it's being used, is, you know, we need to fix that, because he doesn't want, you know, he wants to be transparent, doesn't want to appear that you know, money is coming in that's not being used for its designated purposes. He proposed that if in fact, now let me back up, is I still don't know what that money is used for. Spence, do you have any idea?
I don't. Okay. Greg's closer to it than I am.
Yeah. So Greg was going to talk with Warner and then get back to me, but I haven't heard anything back yet. So what Greg was proposing is that Donna assist, you know, the AG's office with their cases. I don't know if he meant that it would be that Donna would handle a caseload, which she doesn't have the time for, or if it's simply, as she has been helping them in the past, with helping with motions, with expert witnesses, things like that. And so he and I need to have another conversation about that. And so what I would envision, is not knowing, you know, how the money is appropriated. If this money could be used by UPC, one, it could either be used to offset Donna's salary if the grant were to go away. But Donna had proposed working with CJC and developing a week-long basic or a domestic violence boot camp for prosecutors, and that CJC could spearhead that to develop the training, but to, you know, so prosecutors that are dealing with DV cases.
No. Can we see this?
CCJJ.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. I know I was getting my acronyms mixed up. Thank you. But for those prosecutors, yeah. You know, from any prosecutor, whether, you know, out of the AG's office, counties, and cities, would, you know, be invited to this course and basically train them how to do a domestic violence case. We all know how to try cases, but I think there's enough specialty, nuances, other things that are involved with a domestic violence case that Donna has, you know, sees that there could be some benefit for a week-long boot camp. So those are just some ideas on those funds. So I'll get back with Greg and see if he was able to find out how those funds are being used. But again, it was brought to my attention, so I just wanted to bring it to the council's attention. Any questions on that, or any direction?
For the AG's office or for UPC?
No, it's, well, it's
what the statute says is that it is a half of 1% that goes to the Attorney General's office with a proviso in there that it shall be used to train municipal and county prosecutors in domestic violence.
Right.
It's a shall, it's not a may.
Yeah, so that's, is, I will do, you know, again, I'll get with Greg and see if he's gotten any information from Warner. Warner is the, I'm not sure what his title is, but he's the budget guy there in the AG's office. And then once we find out, you know, we'll figure out how those funds can be used to train city and county prosecutors in domestic violence. Okay, that then takes us to PIMS. Ron, do you want to kind of update us on PIMS?
Just continue to support it. If people have any questions or problems, we had a lot of people who needed changes within their documents to be, of course, court said they weren't being formatted properly or something, so we've done a lot of document changes so that they were, court said, they'd accept it. There's been a few other issues. One question I had that I wasn't sure of what to do, how to do that, is there's a couple of small issues with PIMS, little bugs, especially with, right now there's three counties that are doing, still using PIMS to e-file information with the court, and it comes up with a little error because there, when you use Word to create, like the PC statement or something in Word, it uses special characters in it, like the little curly braces when you do quotes. It does a little curly thing, and when PIMS tries to convert that, it sees that as an invalid character and gives an error. That's something that needs to be fixed, but it's such a small niche piece. I'm not sure if it's worth, if we should spend the money to fix it because it, or not. I haven't asked them how much it would cost to do that yet, but I'm thinking probably in the neighborhood of, it's probably going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $5,000-$10,000 to fix that issue. And then other than that, there's no real things that's a problem other than I'm starting to see as people move to new computers or they do updates, if they do a Java update, it breaks PIMS, so we have to go in and back tell PIMS to use an older version of Java because it's not built to use the newer versions. There are some security issues with that if it's out in the open, but if it's behind your local firewall, there shouldn't be any issue with it. So I'm just looking at how to keep that viable going forward. As long as we can keep them on the older version of Java, we're fine. If it gets to where the point where it's a concern for security, or they just can't use the older version, then we're going to have to have PIMS recompiled to use a different. Java is just a background software that it uses to serve up PIMS on the screen. And as it continues to, they continue to update that, but PIMS won't work with a newer version that's been updated to fix security issues. I don't think it's a big problem as long as, like I said, everybody has their PIMS behind their own network, so it's not like it's exposed to the outside, so I don't think it's a big problem, but I'm looking into that. So there's a possibility to go forward. We might have to spend a little bit to get PIMS recompiled to use a new version of, a more updated version of that, because that's been actually an issue that's happened several times over the past few months, and I've been able to fix it by just pointing it to an older version right now. But I don't know what the security issues are locally, and that from what I can see, it's not a big deal for local jurisdictions, unless you, like Salt Lake County, I think, is going to have an issue. They're getting updated because they're more exposed. They're having the police get to it and everything, so it's not just internal. So we're looking into the issues for that. So we may have to keep it running. There may be a small cost associated with that, but I'll find out what the costs are. I haven't been able to get with them and get that cost yet. The one problem is to get a bid from them costs us a little bit of money. They take an hour or two to do a couple hours to give us a bid. They charge us for those 2 or 3 hours it takes to get a bid. So just want to make sure that's okay to go before I authorize them to do that.
Talking about getting PIMS to work with the newer version of Java, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean that, and then there's that little bug. I'm not sure we should spend the money to fix that or not, but I would like to get a cost, what it would cost to fix that and what it would cost to get it to work with the newer version of Java. that'll cost a couple hundred bucks probably to get a bid from them to do that. They charge us, if I call them, they charge us now. If I talk to them for 20 minutes or 10 minutes on a problem, they will, DTS will charge us for that time. Used to be they didn't, but I see now that they are.